This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I was asking Ethan here what he's doing to the monitor, because if you're watching on the YouTube or the X, formerly Twitter, it's got a nice, well, it did. There was a nice little slate. I think we call that a slate, Sue.
Really? What does it say?
It said the Mark Reardon Show, but it was cool. It looked really good. Was it different, Ethan?
Yeah, we usually, well, that's new today. Colors, you can thank our brand manager, Trisha Everding, for adding
that. Amazing.
If you can watch, if you want to see Mark Reardon and Sue Thomas's pretty faces, then, you know, go watch.
Look elsewhere, because we don't have them.
Yeah. Mine is typically, I never quite understand this. Mine is always blocked by the microphone, so you can only see part of my face.
75% of the time, yes.
Like, if you go to the previous show, when Annie and the gang are on, it's like perfect.
Oh,
like,
is that right?
No, Annie looks like she's in studio quality. It's like portrait mode and all this. But she sits over there where Ethan is, and, you know, I'm running my own board. I'm the only damn person here that runs their own board. You've heard
Props
beg for empathy here along those lines.
I'll give it to you for that.
Thank you, Sue. Yes. I appreciate that. Hey, we woke up this morning, or at least I woke up this morning, to lots of pictures from Japan. Fred is there, and it was his first full day. Right now, it's in the middle of the night. What is it, like 4 in the morning?
I don't know. Hang on. I put it on my phone.
Yeah, I think it's like it's about 5 a.m., right? Is it 14 hours? Is that what we said yesterday?
Yeah, maybe 14.
It's 14 hours. Okay, on the world clock, it says
5 a.m.
It is 5 a.m.
Yeah. He's probably just getting up. He's probably just getting going there.
You think on vacation he's getting up at 5 a.m.?
Well, yeah, because I think Marie's going to want him getting going. Yeah. There's going to be a walk involved before they do the bus and
this
all this
100%
stuff.
This is 100% accurate. Yeah, I think she will have it scheduled to the end.
I will say, in the pictures that we saw, I was very delighted to see a very nice, you know, soft olive green jacket.
He had his jacket on.
Mr. Bodenheimer.
Yeah.
He did have his rain jacket on.
There was moisture on it and everything. It looked fantastic.
Moisture. Wow.
Yes.
Well, we do miss him, but Ethan's holding down the fort. We're trying to keep things a day ahead because we can't do what Fred does, and he puts things together at the last minute all the time.
Hall of Famer.
Right. That's exactly why he is a Hall of Famer. But we have a lot to get to here this afternoon. Josh Hammer's coming up here in due time at 3:25. Look, his show is on every weekday. No, it's not every weekend, sorry, Saturdays at 1 p.m. And he's got a new book out that is out today, which is called Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. He wrote a great column on Mahmoud Khalil and whether or not he should be deported. So we'll get to that with Josh here in a little bit. We have, well, this is Telephone Tuesday, so it's the second Telephone Tuesday, and we're going to find maybe the third unofficially, but we're going to take calls in the 4 o'clock hour. I've got a couple of questions to ask the audience, and I've committed to this through the end of the month, so that's today and next week. Man, my brain, I'm telling you, it's like all over the place today.
Right.
I have no excuse either. I slept well last night. But we'll get to Telephone Tuesday in the 4 o'clock hour. Our friend David Strom from HotAir.com, who's written about a lot of things, including something I'm about to share share with you. And then my old J school friend, Chris Trevino, who's on the Mizzou and I guess the broadcast crew for Mizzou football and basketball. And we played Drake on Thursday night. Now, we're going to preview that with Chris. But Ethan, you all also got a hold of the play-by-play guy for Drake for the Bulldogs, right?
Yes. Michael Admire is going to be joining us tomorrow evening. So we're going to get both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Just on a very light note, because I sent this to Sue and I have to highlight it here this afternoon.
So cute.
There's this viral video of this golden retriever. Fox News actually blasted this out on their Twitter and I retweeted it. You can always follow me at Mark Reardon KFTK. But it was a golden retriever who quietly waited for help after he got himself stuck in a coffee table while his owner was in meetings. So the video is essentially this dog in a seated position. His poor little cute face
looks adorable.
He looks a little guilty because he's stuck inside this coffee table, which is not a big coffee table, but he put his head in there. He just couldn't get himself out. And then the owner kind of grabbed it, and the golden retriever was much happier after that. But that is like the most adorable viral video.
Truly is.
We need more of that. That's going to put you in a good mood today. I mentioned David Strom. Let's get into some media malpractice here this afternoon. I have to start with the CBS Evening News because this is really incredible. And when I saw this last night and I tweeted it out, I said, I don't really know whether to laugh or cry, but I'm going to go with laughter because
we are tomorrow announcing.
Hang on a second. Where did that come from? Okay, I don't even know where that came from, Ethan. Where was that? I think that was one of the computers
over there.
That's
the next question for you.
It was not something that I was responsible for. Now I forgot what the hell I was talking about, Sue.
Yeah,
Good Lord.
I'm so sorry.
It's like
I would
the afternoon
if I could.
Media malpractice. So last night I get home and I watch this thing from the CBS Evening News right here, whatever that was, whoever's doing that. So we just have to be careful with that. This is how they started their broadcast last night. Now, like I said, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry because it's become so embarrassing what the media really does on a regular basis. And I have an even more blatant example of it here. But I decided that the right response was laughter because this is just so effing ridiculous. It's unbelievable. So here's what they did.
On this St. Patrick's Day, as millions of Americans celebrate their Irish heritage, recent events remind us that the Irish were among the first immigrants to be targeted in deportation crackdowns.
In the mid-1800s, New York and Massachusetts enforced policies to have Irish immigrants rounded up and deported.
Oh, my God.
The American Civil Liberties Union didn't exist then.
Really?
But if it had, it may have taken the legal position it is taking now, suing the Trump administration to stop what it considers to be the illegal deportation over the weekend of more than 200 migrants to El Salvador.
Oh, my God. So they want to draw a parallel. They lead their newscast going back to the 1800s. Now, I'm not a history expert, but I think the country's changed quite a bit since then.
Just a little bit.
I think we've made progress when it comes to race and gender inequality and all of these things that we've been fighting as a very, very, you know, young nation to achieve. We are flawed. We're not perfect. But I hate this going back in time stuff. It's something that the mainstream media does all the time. And that was, you know, I was thinking of how that happens. Can John Dickerson and whoever the hell else was on that anchor table sit there and say, this is really something we're proud of as a news division at CBS? Or was it like a couple of 20-somethings, this is my guess, who wrote that and decided to go with that narrative? Because they've really become a joke. You can laugh at the mainstream media. I've mentioned this before. When Trump years ago said the media is the enemy of the people, I just laughed my ass off at that. I scoffed. I thought the media is too important. We need journalism. I still believe we need journalism, but they're a joke, and they are the enemy of the people. And here's a more blatant example. The Associated Press was forced to retract a story claiming Tulsi Gabbard and Trump and Putin are very good friends. So she was actually talking about Trump and the Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, and the AP now acknowledges that. The story goes out. The Associated Press has withdrawn its story about U.S. Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard saying President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin are very good friends. Gabbard was talking about Trump and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. The AP will publish a corrected version of the story. Now, Sue, we've talked about this before. You know why this is a more egregious mistake than most media malfeasance out there, because AP content is delivered to local and national news outlets, KMOX,
yep,
KMOV, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, all over the country, sometimes with very little human involvement. The story gets blasted out. the yes. member stations who pay for the content see it, and then they decide whether they roll with that content. They put it in a newspaper. They put it in a broadcast. So every story from the AP, including the ones that get retracted, can appear everywhere from CNN to KMOX to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, literally in a matter of moments.
Yes.
And correcting those stories. So let's say the AP issues their apology. That doesn't mean that the rest of the stories are going to be corrected, because it's not that easy. It's not like the AP can go, oh, we made a mistake. All those stories come back to us.
In fact, that might actually be missed. In other words, somebody could have ripped that for a newscast, read it,
oh, yeah.
and changed shifts and never saw that there was ever even a correction.
And by the way, that's likely to have
correct.
Happened. So you have, there's no other news organization. This is why I am not opposed to what the Trump administration is trying to do with the AP, because there is no news organization that has this much power and influence. And then you get to the AP style book and all that nonsense. It's the word police. So that really is something else and outrageous. Now, let me offer another example here of media malfeasance. And this one isn't too hard to really, you know, dissect and get into. It's another one of those embarrassing things. Let's get to meet here this afternoon, Jeanette Fizguerra. Jeanette Fizguerra is someone who has been detained by ICE in Colorado. And the way that this is being portrayed by the mayor of Denver and representatives of the elected bodies in Colorado is embarrassing. And I'm going to explain here in a second. Here's the mayor of Denver. Oh, it's just this poor mom who works at Target, right?
A number of you have been tracking this morning information about Jeanette Fizguerra, who has been picked up by ICE. I just want to make clear, people should know what this is. This is not immigration enforcement. This is Soviet-style political persecution of political dissidents under the guise of immigration enforcement. This is not someone with a criminal record. This is a mom of American citizens who works at Target and has started a community nonprofit. This is not something that makes our community safer, in my mind. I think it makes our community lawless.
So here's the reporting from Bill Malusian this afternoon. This is quite stunning. I mean, I have three separate screens of screen captures here from this story with this poor innocent mom from Target and what she has done over the years. So she is a convicted criminal, Mexican illegal alien, an immigration activist. ICE confirms that she has a final order of removal via a DOJ immigration judge and has repeatedly had due process. So you have the mayor of Denver and members of the legislature out there saying there's no due process here. No, though, there has been. She's had multiple stays of deportation. She hid in a Denver church for years. This is one of the reasons that you do want to go into churches, because they go in there to avoid deportation, and she's an immigration fugitive. So according to Bill, despite having a final order of removal stretching back to the Obama administration, several Democrat politicians in Colorado falsely claimed that she has had no due process, including Mike Johnston, who's the mayor. You just heard from him. Here's Lorena Garcia, who is a state rep.
I am feeling a lot, because last night, in the middle of the night, a woman, a mother of three, who's committed no crime except for wanting to build a better life for her family, was detained and is on expedited deportation because she stands up for her communities.
BS. That's not why she's on deportation.
Wow,
complete
that is
lies.
Shocking.
ICE confirms that she does have a deportation order, and she's had one for years. On February 5th, 2009, the ICE Denver office lodged an immigration detainer on Vizguerra Ramirez. On February 26th of that year, the Arapaho County Court, Centennial, Colorado, convicted her of forged instrument possession, second degree, and sentenced her to a term of 23 days in jail. I'm not exactly sure what is instrument. I'd have to look that up. On February 5th, 2009, they lodged an immigration detainer on Vizguerra Ramirez. On February 27th, ICE took custody of her from the Arapaho County Sheriff's Office pursuant to the immigration detainer. On March 11th of that year, she was released from ICE custody after posting an immigration bond. On March 27th of that year, 2009, they convicted her of failure to display proof of insurance and driving without a license and ordered her to pay fines. On November 18th of 2011, a federal immigration judge denied Vizguerra Ramirez her application for relief from immigration proceedings. Now, keep in mind, time, this is all due process, right? She's before the judge. Yep. She's in a court. They granted her voluntary departure. That's considered an immigration benefit. She failed, however, to depart the U.S. per the terms of the order within the 60-day window. She filed an appeal with the Board of Immigration. On September 8th of that year, she self-removed to Mexico. On April 22nd, she came back because they arrested her in Candelaria, Texas, after she illegally returned to the U.S., and they referred her case for federal prosecution for illegal reentry after removal. On May 1st of 2013, the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas, Pecos Division, convicted her of illegal entry and sentenced her to 1 year of unsupervised probation. Now, why in the hell you can't have this is what's ridiculous. They find her guilty of illegal entry and she gets probation?
I know.
Well, not now. She's getting sent back. Her ass is getting sent back. That's what's happening.
Well, forced instrument, by the way, I looked it up, means intentionally creating, publishing, or circulating a fake or altered financial document or other writing with the intent to defraud
like
or deceive.
Like a license or something
or
like
an
that.
ID.
Right, exactly. On May 2nd of 2013, she entered ICE custody in El Paso, Texas, where her prior removal order was reinstated. On May 30th of 2013, they considered her case withdrawn because she departed the U.S. prior to a decision being made on her appeal. Some of this is just court blah, 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 blah. On June 7th of 2013, ICE releases her on an order of supervision because under policy at the time, she didn't meet the agency's priorities for removal. That's the Obama administration, right? On July 2nd, 2014, her application for a stay of deportation is granted until February 1st of 2015. On February 20th of 2015, ICE granted the application for stay of deportation again. On February 15th, 2017, ERO Denver denied another application for stay. Her counsel notified ICE that she would be taking sanctuary in the First Unitarian Society Church in Denver and would not be reporting to ICE as ordered. On May 11th of 2017, she received an automatic stay of removal due to Senate Bill 603. That's a private bill submitted on her behalf, and her removal was stayed until March 15th, 2019. On March 14th, 2019, she once again sought sanctuary at the First Unitarian Society Church in Denver, where she is an immigration fugitive. So now this activist, this mother, and by the way, here's a little bonus round for you. On her Facebook page here, so I'll show you the cartoon. It's a cartoon of a Native American scalping President Trump with two arrows to his chest and blood dripping out. And it says, "This is how you make America great again."
Nice.
So you can't be deported simply for that, right? That is free speech here in this country. But guess what? All of the other things that they've cited you, and by the way, the original reason that they're trying to kick you out because you came here illegally and haven't gone through the process still remains. So again, you have the mayor, whatever you did, Ethan, take that back. What I don't know what you just did. My ears, I just lost contact in one ear. Whatever happens in this particular situation, she has been given a lot of due process, like a ton of due process. So the notion that the mayor of Denver, and here, Lorena Garcia once again.
Yesterday, she was here marching with us, still fighting for humanity and dignity. We have LAD because historically, buildings like this have not been open to Black and brown people. So we created a day to say you are welcome. You are welcome in the people's house.
No, you're not welcome here
These
anymore.
People are
That's what I would say.
Misinformed, or they're just, I can't decide what it is. Do they willfully know this is wrong?
Yeah, I think so. They don't care. They don't care. All right, we're off and running here. Josh Hammer, he's got a new book out. He's coming up next.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm still trying to figure out my entire role in that, man. I'm getting a lot of billing, and my agent hasn't worked all that out with Brian. I think he's going to be here tomorrow. There are some tickets available for Saturday night, and you can always go to briankilmeade.com to get the VIP tickets. I did have a listener that reached out to me because I've been saying that you can get the VIP tickets as an add-on, and they were having a difficulty doing that, so I'm trying to get the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
But it's going to be a lot of fun, and I can't believe it's almost here on Saturday night. I heard from another friend of mine, a St. Louis City cop friend, who I was unaware was a big Kilmeade fan, and he's going to be there. Then he asked, you know, because people love the team at Fox, right? He said, well, is Jesse going to be there? I'm like, no, this is Brian, not Jesse.
Just a Kilmeade
event. Right. But I will say, and you've been at these events, Jesse and Brian have a good-natured relationship. They tease each other. You'll hear some teasing of Jesse, is my guess.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday night by Mr. Kilmeade, for sure. Hey, Josh Hammer has a show every Saturday that airs at 1 p.m. on 97.1 FM Talk. He's a regular guest. He's a great guest on a lot of different topics. And he has a new book out today called Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. We've been talking about it for a while. Josh, congratulations. It is publication date, right?
Mark, it is publication date today, and there's no one I'd rather spend it with than you, my friend.
Well, awesome to have you on this day, because I know it's a big day for you with the book. Can we start, though, by, and I think this ties in, you wrote a column about Mahmoud Khalil and how his deportation would not be unlawful. Some of this ties in because, look, this is a guy who has called for the destruction of Western civilization. Your book is about how important Israel is in all this fight, but his deportation or his detention at this point really kind of plays into a lot of this, doesn't it?
It sure does. It certainly does. And Mahmoud Khalil, one, is deeply opposed to everything that this country stands for. But two, most important for just crass bread and butter legal purposes, Mark, he's not a citizen. And there are a lot of people out there. This is kind of the point of the column that I wrote for Newsweek, the Los Angeles Times. It was my syndicated column this past week. The argument that I made was that there are a lot of people out there who are trying to deliberately and on ideological grounds blur or outright eliminate the distinction between citizen and non-citizen. This is all part of the overarching globalist agenda. And a lot of people say, oh my God, how can you say that? I mean, some people say that's an anti-Semitic dog whistle. You know, good luck saying that to me, I suppose. But there actually is a globalism, let's destroy all borders, destroy all nation states agenda. It's a very real thing. It's kind of like the John Lennon song Imagine playing out on a geopolitical chessboard there. But in reality, Mark, our law is clear. There is a very big distinction between citizen and non-citizen. So to take just one example there, Justice Robert Jackson, one of the great justices on the Supreme Court in the 20th century, a champion of due process. He was the great dissenter in the Japanese internment case, Korematsu, from the FDR presidency, World War II. 9 years after that, though, in 1953, in a case called Shaughnessy, it was Justice Robert Jackson, this great champion of due process, who wrote in his opinion that due process does not give an alien a right to come to this country. And once the alien is here, it does not give him the right to stay here against the people's will. That's what it boils down to. If you are an alien, if you are not a citizen, whether you are on a student visa, a green card, or anything in between, Mark, if we the people ultimately decide that we don't want you here, we can kick you out. That's basically it. That's the law, pretty much, period, full stop, end of story.
And I kind of support that. And I don't know, do you think that the circumstances of the Brown University professor, who is also a doctor, I guess this is Dr. Rasha Aliwa, is the same circumstance, because she had a valid work visa that was issued recently, but she went to the funeral of a Hamas leader, and that was what the administration is, I guess, deportation, or ICE, is citing her for. I don't know which organization. I guess it's Homeland Security. Same rules apply to her, you think, or not?
Yeah, exact same rules, because again, she's not a citizen. She's here on a visa, but she's a legal alien. I mean, Mahmoud Khalil was also a legal alien. He was here on a green card, which is basically the highest, I suppose, that you can be as legal alien. You're a legal permanent resident at this point. But the key distinction for purposes of due process, and frankly on many other grounds too, I mean, the Bill of Rights is a good example here. I mean, the entirety of the Bill of Rights is absolutely secured for U.S. citizens. That's one of the purposes of being a citizen. But it does not necessarily apply the exact same way to non-citizens. The case on this is actually very murky. There are some amendments that do apply. But for instance, the Second Amendment is a good example. If you're a citizen, you can go into your gun store, and assuming that you are of legal age and you pass the background check, you can purchase a firearm. That's not true if you're an alien. Even if you are here legally, even if you're here on a legal visa, it's not nearly as easy to go in and acquire a firearm. So the law is just genuinely different in many respects for citizens versus non-citizens.
Yeah, that is an interesting comparison there. I never thought of that before. Josh Hammer is my guest. His new book, Israel and Civilization, is out today. All right, you make the case in the book, Josh. We've talked about this before, that it's imperative that Western Jews and Christians stand together shoulder to shoulder like never before. Why is that?
Well, Mark, I'm really delighted to be talking with you about this. So I have been talking about this for many years now. Look, I, like many others, was just so disgusted, obviously, by October 7th itself, but above all, by the global reaction to October 7th, where we had a moment there where the world basically looked at the Jewish state, the Holy Land, the birthplace of Western civilization on the one hand, and then this medieval Islamist death cult trying to take us back to the 7th century on the other hand. And you had a lot of people on university campuses and academia and just generally elite circles on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean who said, oh yeah, I'll side with the latter, not the former. And that was just a total five-alarm fire. So I took it upon myself to write this book, which basically calls for Jews and Christians alike to lock arms like never before and to rediscover our joint, mutual, shared biblical inheritance, an inheritance that would have been broadly recognized for instance, the American founders. The American founders were men who were intimately familiar with the Hebrew Bible, with the Hebrew scriptures, with the Old Testament there. I mean, look at the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, for instance. It's inscribed with Leviticus on the outside. Thou you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all the inhabitants thereof. You had Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, who wanted the national seal of the United States to be Moses parting the Red Sea. My personal favorite figure in American history, Abraham Lincoln, who famously described Americans just on the precipice of the Civil War as an almost chosen people, deliberately using the covenantal language of the Hebrew scriptures. Lincoln actually quoted the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, more often in his speeches than he did the New Testament. So I'm really just encouraging Jews and Christians to rediscover all of this. And I demonstrate in painstaking detail in some of the earlier chapters of this book just how much of the common law, of the constitutional order, frankly, just also day-to-day moral and ethical paradigms that we take for granted. I mean, something as simple, as prosaic as the golden rule. I mean, treat others as you'd like to be treated. Yeah. I mean, where does that come from? That comes from Leviticus chapter 19. I mean, treat your fellow, treat a stranger as your fellow. It's all right there if we would bother to look. So at a time like now, where it's not just the woke DEI left, but increasingly also, tragically, it's a small but nonetheless loud and perhaps, dare I say, even growing segment of the online right that is calling for us to separate, for Christians and Jews to no longer tag team together, for the U.S. and Israel to no longer have close relations. I think it was really time for someone to write this book and say, no, we are stronger together. We have the exact same enemies. Wokeism, Islamism, global neoliberalism are the three that I argue for in the book. And praise God, Mark, the book's been selling like wildfire. It was number three on Amazon yesterday. It was actually temporarily out of stock on Amazon this morning. I think that's fixed by now, but people seem to be buying it, and I really hope that the word gets out there.
I mean, and you wrote this book before, I'm guessing this was finalized before the election, or did you have to finalize it right after the election? Because my question would be, if we're staying, you make the case that we're standing at this civilizational inflection point, and I think you're right, but boy, the attack against that is certainly a lot different than it would have been if Kamala Harris was in the White House right now.
No doubt about that. And I finished drafting the manuscript in October. I probably made my absolute final tiny tweaks, I guess, in December. So it would have been after the election. But there's not really a whole lot of post-2024 election content in the book. So for instance, Bashar al-Assad in Syria, I was not able to account for that because the manuscript was just basically finished by then. So we are living in very different times right now. That is for sure. When it comes to U.S.-Israel relations, than we would have otherwise been in a, God help us, Kamala Harris presidency. And, you know, Mark, we've seen the collapse of this very fragile ceasefire in Gaza over the past 24 or 48 hours or so. Hamas, of course, is itself only to blame for that. They're the only party to blame here. They had every opportunity to prolong the ceasefire, and they basically said no. And Donald Trump has clearly indicated that he will stand with Israel and support them diplomatically, militarily, whatever they want. So the ball is really in Prime Minister Netanyahu's court right now. And I'm happy, Mark, that it looks like he finally is ready to actually try to finish the job this time. This war has been going on a long time, but Israel announced a war aim at the outset of the war of eradicating Hamas. And unless and until they do that, they probably will have lost the war, tragically. They got
to
do it.
Josh, it's stunning to me as a non-Jew, and I think a lot of people would put themselves in this category, how much anti-Semitism has been exposed, especially on college campuses. And I think we've, you know, been reminded of this in the past couple of weeks with this, you know, Mahmoud Khalil situation. You know, what happened at Columbia, what happened at Harvard, what happened at some of these other Ivy League universities. Luckily here in St. Louis at Wash U, they put the kibosh on it relatively quickly. But the Jew hatred that has been exposed on a regular basis, and by the way, I don't think it's really died down that much since that fateful date, is really kind of stunning to people like me looking at it from the outside.
It's tragic. It is nothing short of tragic. And Mark, another thing that I argue at great length in this book is to make the case that people should care about anti-Semitism regardless of whether or not you're Jewish, for a very simple reason. Well, two reasons, really, and they're related. One is that it's never actually about the Jews. It always starts with the Saturday people, but the Sunday people is always the ultimate target. So Karl Marx is a perfect example of this. Karl Marx has this infamously anti-Semitic essay from the early 1840s called On the Jewish Question. He himself was a self-hating Jew. He clearly harbored a unique disdain for Judaism, but that wasn't his actual goal. His goal was nothing less than the overthrowing of Western free market capitalism and Western Christendom, Western Christian civilization. So he viewed the Jews as just a convenient stepping stone towards a broader civilizational assault. And, you know, more generally speaking, Mark, you know, historically, I can't think of a single example, literally not a single one, of a nation state that has discriminated against the Jews, has oppressed the Jews, has generally treated them poorly, and then was better off for it. Yeah. There is a very clear trajectory here that when basically how go the Jews, how go the canary in the coal mine, so goes the society. And there's a reason for that, which is that anti-Semitism is here, there, and everywhere, symptomatic of a broader societal or cultural rot. So I care about this flare-up not merely for self-interested reasons as an American Jew, but also just as an American patriot, as someone who simply cares about the future of his country, as someone born on Lincoln's birthday who clerked for a federal judge. I'm a lawyer. I love this country. I love this Constitution. I love everything about it. And I see anti-Semitism, and it's like, oh, my God. I mean, what could come next here? I mean, this has never, ever, ever ended well, and it's time to nip this in the bud right now.
Josh, congratulations on the new book. It's out today. It's called Israel and Civilization, The Fate of the Jewish Nation and the Destiny of the West. You mentioned the LA Times piece. You know, when I woke up on Saturday morning, I go to all these sources, even sometimes on the weekend, and I saw your column about Mahmoud Khalil, and I texted you right away. I was encouraged that Josh Hammer and like a guy like Scott Jennings is now on the editorial board of the LA Times. But do you have a regular gig with the LA Times where they're publishing stuff?
So they run my syndicated column. So good. I file a weekly syndicated column through Creator Syndicate. And that's actually a fairly recent thing. LA Times just picked up the column maybe about a month and a half ago or so. So, you know, the owner of the LA Times is trending right of center, it seems. So it's a very, very interesting time between that and Jeff Bezos at The Washington Post to be involved in these large newspapers. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, Scott Jennings and I mentioned it. We're very close. And we've talked about this because Patrick had reached out to him in the aftermath of his appearances on CNN. Really, Jennings kind of started taking off after the first debate in June, and he does seem open to having more voices. So for me to open up the LA Times on my computer on Saturday morning and to see a piece by you, that was different, and that was a very good difference in what I'm used to seeing in that newspaper. So I have a little hope for the legacy media, if you will, Josh. But congratulations again on the book, and keep us posted on everything.
You bet, Mar. Thank you so much.
You hear his show, by the way, every Saturday, 1 p.m., the Josh Hammer Show, right here on 97.1 FM Talk. We're coming back with more. Hang in there. Fish Fry Fridays. We have another one this week at the Assumption Paris. You know what, Sue? I'm going to have to, you know, you have the list in front of you.
You're going to have
brain,
off.
My brain is defaulting to the previous one.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to do that. So here, let's cross all that out here. Assumption Parish on Mattis Road in South County this Friday. Then Queen of All Saints next Friday. I just heard from George Gray from The Price is Right. He believes that he can be at next Friday's Fish Fry.
Nice.
Maybe doing a live Price is Wrong. So that's coming up next week. Hey, I wanted to share this. This is kind of brutal. This is a guy who used to be on The Bachelor. I don't watch the show. I don't know who this guy is.
Me neither.
But we're dog owners, right?
Yes.
And he went on Instagram yesterday, and he basically even said, look, I guess you could say our family's been through something pretty traumatic. I've debated on whether we should share this publicly, but I figured you guys are going to ask questions and probably see things, so I might as well get ahead of it. So this was something that took place on Thursday. He was having some friends over to barbecue on his patio. It was a nice night. And then he's going to kind of tell you the story from there.
So on Thursday, I was having some friends of mine over to barbecue. Catherine took the kids to the mall. And we're just barbecuing here on my patio. And it was a really nice night, so I had the doors and windows open. And some of the smoke from the barbecue started to drift inside, and our smoke alarm started going off. And so I grab a dish rag, and I'm going over to, and I waft the smoke away from the smoke alarm because the siren was insanely loud. And as I'm holding the dish rag, Moose comes up and like bites it and kind of nips my finger really aggressively, which is something that he does not do.
Moose is a boxer, and you know, this guy, he's not had this dog for that long, but he's never done anything like this.
You know, I kind of gave him a no, Moose. And again, the siren's just blaring. And then he goes and starts to bite my feet. And like, he's kind of done this before. Like, if you have a herding dog, you're probably familiar with this, where they kind of nip the heels, but he never really bites. Well, he was biting my feet so hard, he actually put holes in my shoes, and it was hurting my feet. So at this point, again, there's so much chaos going on with the alarm going off. I give him like a very stern, like, Moose, no, no. And it was right about that moment where he shows his teeth at me and just attacks me. And I don't mean like bite and run off like a lot of dogs do when they're scared or defensive. I mean, attacks me.
So he's bleeding badly. He says that Moose goes into the backyard, and then I'm going to rush through this because I have the audio, but I don't have time.
I know
to
what it is.
He says he comes back through the door and attacks him for a second time. And he says, I'm not trying to be dramatic, but I honestly felt like I'm fighting for my life here against the dog. Not just a dog, my dog, right? He's like, my dog. We've only had him for under 3 months, but he's my dog. But it had to be that siren.
Yeah. Listen, they attack instability. And that guy was freaking out. That happened to me with one of mine when I was trying to get a dog out of the fence who was caught. And I was freaking out and trying to get him out. And one of mine jumped up, not the current ones, but got a piece of me. Just because
right.
They can't handle
yeah.
instability.
Right.
So the calmer you can be, that will not happen.
And unfortunately, mm-hmm. it was. And then they had to get rid of the dog. And
oh, that's
I don't think
the
they have.
Fault.
I know. And he's heartbroken by it. But look, you're in a situation. You have kids. What are you going to do, right?
I get it.
Yep. All right. Sue's News coming up.